Now it's time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist, Joey Bia's research grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B's Outdoor Nature and Science. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Today in my studio to talk about emerging from hibernation is my good friend, Inspector Dave. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, but that's a mouthful, that title.
Well, you know what? You get used to saying some of that stuff all the time, hey, so it's repetitive, but hey, guess what? It's what people want to hear, I think.
So what is hibernation, Joey B?
Well, you know something? It's funny that we can talk about hibernation, that's what the show is about, and or we could be talking about migration. Well, let's talk about this. If there is no available food for an organism, they're going to want to do one of two things, hibernate or migrate somewhere. So if you go into hibernation, your respiration rate goes way down. Your heart rate goes way down. And when I say way down, we're talking about, you know, I've done my research out west in Montana on grizzly bears. And when we're talking about their heart rate is going to 4 beats per minute, their breaths as 1, 2, and 3 beats per minute or breaths per minute, it is super, super low. So when they hibernate, they are truly hibernating because guess what? I don't have to use energy to try to stay alive inside or outside in the wintertime somewhere. And this show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or in one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com.
So Joey B, that description you gave, do people hibernate?
Well, you know, it's funny, and you and I were chatting about this, and you know you live down the road. And there's one neighbor, and I joke with him, and I call him the groundhog because he sort of does hibernate. In late fall, he disappears, and you see him in the spring, just like the groundhog. But there are many people that are like that because, hey, there are people that don't like the cold, and you hear that all the time. There are people that don't like the snow. There are people that don't like the cold and the snow. And there are many people that just have less outdoor activities that are occurring in the wintertime. So, no, people don't truly hibernate. But yeah, they might hibernate and be gone for quite a while. So my question to you is, what are some of the emerging signs of nature?
Well, some of the things I think about are the changing in birds from the winter birds to the spring or summer birds. You start to see a different occupant in the yard. You hear maybe some different songs. We start to hear birds starting to sing. And I have a lot of boxes in the backyard, nesting boxes for the birds. So I start to see them checking them out. Maybe the male will sit on top and sing a little bit and try to present it to the female. And then once they choose a house, then I'll see them bringing in sticks and grass and all different things, litter that they can make their nest with. So those are some of the things I really watch the birds, you know, for that.
Well, you know what? A couple of the signs that I personally see, and you mentioned that specifically with the cardinals, because once again, the male is red and around Valentine's Day, he begins to sing and set up his territories. But the crocuses that are popping, and once you see, and you know this, the excitement of an outdoorsman or a gardener, once you start to see even a little bit of the green coming through, you're like, yeah, and you just have that excitement because you know spring is coming. And one thing, and I happen to be the morning guy, so I'm looking for that morning sunlight and the sunlight changing. But just when you're outside and the strength of the sun on your face in March, it's like you feel it and you're going, yeah, it's here. And where you live, because again, we have listeners from around the country, actually from around the world, but around the country. But you know, if you're in that colder climate of which we happen to live in, when you get to feel that sun, it's just one of my like signs of spring right there. So we're talking about emerging from hibernation. Have you seen a groundhog yet?
That was my Valentine's Day present this year. I saw him running through the neighbor's yard, making a beeline. I saw him again a few days later. So he was out really early this year.
And what typically happens with that is that you may have some of those warmer days. So you get, we'll call it the emergence of a warm day. And the groundhog basically says, all right, it's time. And he gets up. And he starts moving about, munching a little bit, because there's not that much available food for him. That's why he hibernated. And then he feels a little bit of the cold and heads back in. And it's almost like, and I sort of joke, it's like the person who likes that midnight snack where they just wake up and they go downstairs to the refrigerator, they eat a little bit, and then they go back to sleep. And that's sort of, you know, the analogy of what happens to the groundhog at this time of the year. Now, do flowering bulbs know when to emerge?
I think they have a pretty good idea what's going on. I have a number of different types of bulbs, daffodils and crocuses and tulips. And they always seem to know. They start to poke out a little bit when you start getting the warm days. And the warmer parts of the yard where there's more sunlight, you can see they pop a little earlier. So it gives you a nice, it's a good way to stagger your bulbs too, besides using variety. Have some in a shady spot, some in a sunny spot. So they'll grow at a little bit different rate based on the warmth that you have. But of all the years, and I've had bulbs, I don't know, 30, 35 years, and they always seem to know when to come up. I think, and I remember one year ever where they kind of got bit and beat up by a storm. But even if the bulbs are pushing up and the greens are up and you get a little snow, that helps to insulate them. Snow is actually an insulator, so it's not going to hurt them. It's only if the flowers are up and then you maybe get a late snowstorm, then some of the flowers might get bent over or broken off a little bit. But it's rare for that to happen. So I think they're a good indicator that the weather has broken and we're going to be okay.
You know what? So probably some, and you know me, in the photography, some of the most beautiful photographs I get is, it might be a crocus or a daffodil with a late snowstorm, and you've got that color of the flower popping with a white background. It's just really cool. And something for you to say as you're staggering your bulbs around your house, the ones that are planted, you know, very close to your home, as your home is emanating some of the heat energy or losing some of the heat energy, the bulbs closest to your home typically will germinate, I shouldn't say germinate, will come out sooner. Now, what are some of the weather pattern changes?
Well, being a student of the weather and just enjoying the Weather Channel and everything about weather that there is to read and study, the things that I know is that in the springtime, we do get more severe weather because we're getting that clash of the cold and the warm. So that's when tornadoes and severe storms and even some microbursts can occur, heavy flooding, maybe a late nor'easter can still form off the East Coast. And out west, they can go, weather's so crazy, they can either get drought or they can get flood. There seems to be no in-between when you get out to the western coast. But the things I also look at is the sun angle. You talked about that. The sun angle is different, so the shadowing is different. So things that were in the shade now are no longer in the shade. Trees are starting to bud a little bit, so that's indication of the weather. And we see maybe some late snow, you know, can help, you know, so we can't put our stuff away yet because we have to still be prepared. But I think about sounds too, even the wind. The wind maybe has a different sound too. And we talked about even the direction of the wind, that how that can be a forecaster of the weather a little bit, as you hear sounds that you didn't hear before. Now they're coming from a different direction, whether it's a church bell or a train or a highway. And that just tells you that, okay, winds are changing. Prevailing winds maybe are switching around, or there's a storm wind that's coming. It's coming out of a different direction than you normally hear it. So I look for all those different things. Cloud patterns. The cloud patterns have been really different over the last like 10, 15 years. I'm seeing types of clouds I've never really seen before. And it's not that I'm any more aware of them. I don't think it's just that there's so many different patterns now than just the old cumulonimbus that we always saw years back.
Well, you know, it's funny as you're talking about these weather patterns and I'm listening to your story. We had a bit, again, for us, a bit warmer day. Sometimes it's a 50 degree day and then back to the 30s and so on. And a week ago, we had a warmer day here, so we're in the 50s, and I'm checking weather across the nation, and Billings, Montana, and I've flown into Billings many times, one of my favorite places out there getting towards, you know, Yellowstone and whatnot, and Billings, Montana, the high for the day was 1. And so for those of you folks in Billings listening to this right now, I wish you some warmer weather when you've got days where your high is 1. And local weather is, you know, okay, so where do you live, and how are the patterns changing where you live? Now, what should we be doing, Inspector Dave, in the yard and the garden?
Well, the main thing is exercising patience, that not to rush out like right away into the garden, that we need to give time for nature to kind of catch up with itself to be sure things are settled down. But we can do some light cleanup, some leaves maybe that you missed last fall or that blew in from another yard, looking for some winter damage from storms, branches or bushes may need to be pruned a little bit or cut back. And just a light cleanup generally around the yard. And really, we can still do pH testing. So whether it's going to be your lawn or whether area that you want to be sure that you test with a meter, and then if you find you need to change the pH, then adding some lime. Usually it's lime that we have to do. And bringing some lime in to give it time to react. Because remember, there's a reaction time for the lime to bond with the molecules and all that. So we can't put the lime down and it's going to be instantly available. So the sooner we get it down before the actual growing season, the better it is, because it'll give time to make everything regulated. And then just looking around your yard, some planning. Maybe you want to put a new garden bed in somewhere or a new flower bed, so you can start thinking about that.
Do you have any preference whether it's pulverized or granular lime when you apply?
I like the granular can be easier because it's less dusty, but it does have a longer reaction time because now you have a granule that has to break down and then kind of spread out. So the granulated, the powdered lime, is a little messier, but it does act a little quicker. They have a kind of a quick-acting lime they have now, too, that's out there. So if you're a little late in getting it down, you can look for the fast-acting lime. They also have liquid lime. I've used that in the past. It goes on the end of your hose sprayer, and you can actually do a liquid spray on the yard.
That's a new one to me. That's cool. So is it too early to order seeds and plants?
Oh, no. This is when we want to... We already had our catalogs that we looked at back in the winter, and we're all hyped up, and we want to order 100 packages of seeds and all that, which we talked about not to do that, to make sure you pace yourself. But yes, ordering now is a good time. You can find certain sales, maybe free shipping. But the main thing is variety. You have a certain variety maybe you really like and it's popular, or something new that's experimental. And you want to order now, get your order in so it's available before it runs out. It gets back ordered or it becomes not available at all. So you want to have all those seeds in hand, and you can store them. All the seeds that they're going to be selling now have already been harvested and they're stored. So just follow some good, cool, dry storage areas, you know, for your seed. And then the same with your plants. You know, you want to get your plant orders in if you're buying small plants, so that the grower knows what they need to get in stock, and that you don't get shut out of any particular variety with them. Also, there's only so many seeds to go around on popular varieties. So one of the things that we did is cross-country nurseries. I know Janie is one of your favorite people, and we have our plants ordered already. But what can you tell us about what she's doing now at the nursery?
Well, it's funny. She calls it a nursery, but it's truly a farm. And when you look at it, and before we went on air here, and I'm thinking about it, and I'm saying by right now, because I know when she starts to germinate seed, by right now she probably has, I'm going to say, 200,000-300,000 chili plants, tomato plants, basils, tomatillas, eggplants. You know, specifically it's chilies, but it's all easily 200,000-300,000 are going right now. And think about this: it's all organic care. It is I can say Cross Country Nurseries is some of the finest plants, because you know you and I already placed our order. We're going to pick it up. See, Inspector Dave, they don't know this. When we head out down to the farm there, the first thing you and I do is we go fly fishing for the day, and then we go pick up our order. So for those of you that are out here and listening, you can actually make a day of going to pick up. Some people just might be going to shoot some photography, go for a hike, do something in the outdoors, and then go pick up your plants. But at the Cross Country Nurseries, they are doing it all right now.
Now, also this time of year, we're getting gardening supplies, you know, because we have to get all our different material that we're going to need in. So you have any thoughts on that?
Well, you mentioned this one and when we were off air, and it's about the back orders, because you go to a nursery right now, and again, they're starving to see people, because very shortly they will be seeing them by the thousands. And you need to make sure, because if there's something you want and people start rushing in, then you have to wait for that back order. So making sure you get your supplies right now is a good thing. Any thoughts that you have with that?
Well, the same thing. They're just better selection, maybe some new things that are out, new varieties of supplies or new tools. You know, garden supplies covers a wide variety of areas. So the main thing is just to, you want to get what you desire from the catalog before it's all sold out.
And I've often mentioned this, is that this is probably the time of the year where you can actually get the nurseryman's or nurserywoman's ear and have a conversation with them. Because once they get super busy, it is so difficult to have that conversation with them. Because, hey, if you go there, you'll see it's like from customer to customer and they just keep moving. So questions that you have now will get good answers too. Now, for you, is there anything bad to do in the garden in early spring?
Well, again, we talked about exercising patience. Like, we want to get out there because we're excited and we're motivated by the weather. But if you have mud season by you, the ground's very wet, you want to try to stay off of some of the lawn areas because you're going to compact the soil because you're going to force all the air out and just make it really difficult for the grass, the roots to get down. And the same with your garden area. You don't want to get into your vegetable or flower garden area walking on the soil. It's like an absolute no-no because, again, you're going to compact it, force the air out, and just make clods, and you're going to be really unhappy with the tilt of the soil later on. And rototilling. You can't do that too early. You really have to wait till the soil is nice and dry. You should pick the soil up and squeeze it in your hand. It should be like crumbly, like a sponge, like a wrung out sponge. If it's much wetter than that or it really clogs together, you can't rototill. You have to wait a little while. So main thing is to watch your moisture levels and not to be out there when it's too, too wet.
I know we're all excited about getting out there. That's the problem. You want to be there, but yeah. It's like it's timing.
Yeah. And, you know, getting out there, too, I think you have some thoughts, too, like about our body, like rushing out there too much.
Well, you think about it this way, you know, about there are the, and let's go back to the fun way we're saying our neighbors or friends that actually do their winter hibernation. Many people haven't done anything fitness wise because, hey, gardening is a great, you know, it's funny. It's a hobby, but it's sort of a great sport when you talk about the physicality of what goes on in there. So exercising over the winter time, because my deal in life is I want to do, and I always say it this way, I want to do one exercise thing a day. So I am always doing that, and it doesn't matter whether I'm snowshoeing, and if I can't, I'm inside skipping rope because the snows are too deep, because believe it or not, and sometimes with the snowshoeing, you want to get out in, you know, the perfect snows, so sometimes you are locked inside, and flexibility becomes important. Think about in gardening, how many times during the planting season, do you get up and down in one day? So working on flexibility, that's the stretching of your muscles, is super, super important. And we talk about this. You can YouTube anything in the history of the world. And if you're not good at, well, what type of stretches to do, you can look at static, ballistic, or dynamic. There's three different types of stretching. You can look at those online and find a few that work for you. And I think that's really, really important to do.
Well, we're going to see that video of you jump roping. Are you going to be in a double Dutch tournament maybe someday? You're practicing?
Well, you know what? I can double Dutch, but that's not what I do in the great room, even though we have lots of space there to work out in. You know what? Maybe I've got to find the right double Dutch partner on that one.
Hey, any other personal protection rules we should think about?
I look at it this way. The ones we typically would do, well, how about having a hat on? Because once again, we spoke about the sun getting stronger and putting on sunblocks. And sunblocks are better than sunscreens. You can do a little bit of reading on that one. Always wearing some type of gloves. I mean, there are the heavy-duty work gloves, and then there are the, you know, the cottony gloves. So figure out what type of work you're going to be doing, because we do want to take care of our hands. And then I always talk about eye protection. And it could be something as simple that you're doing with gardening. But what happens if you're chainsawing? And for me, and I talk about my cousin Jimmy Toots, who you know so well, we fish all together. And Jimmy Toots is a chainsaw man every day because he's burning wood every day. And I am that modest chainsawer. So for me, I have chainsaw pants, and they're chaps. And they're designed that if something happens and my chainsaw hits my leg, it just binds and shuts the saw off. So there's some other extra protection. Again, most people don't have chainsaw chaps, and I know that. But just be safe in all that you do.
Right, and that ear protection, again, goes with the chainsaw or outdoor power equipment. You know, very good to have that. And eye protection, you know, you want to make sure you want to protect. I think about all the different senses you have. You want to protect your senses. That's what you're doing. That's what personal protection is. Protecting your eyes, protecting your hearing, protecting your hands, protecting your taste buds, because you know when chemicals can get in there and affect that, and your sense of smell. So that's probably that. And I just thought about that. It's a good way to think
about
it. Actually,
it's a good one. I'm glad you said, because I didn't think about the ear protection, and I always have them on. So yeah, please. Yeah.
Now, I know you're coaching again, and what about the spring sports and the fields? Anything we got to think about there?
The first one I say is this. There are a number of towns, because you know, we have turf fields with grass fields. With the grass fields, if a field has just been chemically applied, and you know, they put the little white flags out, and that's by law, you need to make sure that teams are staying off of that, because I'm going to let you know if you happen to have, we happen to be organic guys and we don't have to worry about this, but there are many people out there that chemically apply on their lawn. Well, your kids shouldn't be playing soccer, football, baseball on your lawns or on fields that are chemically applied. And that includes your pets as well. Now going to the fields. Sometimes, because again, we want to just get out there and get going with your team. On a muddy day, you can destroy a field in one day at one practice. So we need to be careful. It's almost like your rules when you were talking about it's like we want to get into that garden right away, but if it's too muddy, we stay out. Same thing with the fields. And we end up with lots of, you'll have permanent potholes on that muddy day as well. So there's a lot of disruption that goes on in the fields there. So we got to be careful with that one too. Now, there's an awareness of weather during outdoor games or events. Do you have any stories about that?
Well, yes, the weather awareness is something we should have all the time, but certainly more when we're out in the field, on a sports field, an open area, thinking about a fast-moving storm coming up upon us. So we have our ears open. We're listening maybe for thunder, listening for a change in the wind. Maybe we hear hail if it's a really fast-moving storm, some hail bouncing like off cars somewhere nearby. But thinking about how that weather can impact the safety of ourselves and our teammates. And weather apps are good to have for those of you who have smartphones and that, have your local little radar thing so you can get alerts on there. You can get an automatic alert put on there. So if something is in your area, it'll look a little tone out there and it'll give you a little pre-recorded message that something's coming, you need to take cover. And then the lightning detection systems they have on fields, those are important that hopefully they have those on fields that you're playing on, but to make sure that you abide by that warning when it comes out, when a little siren and a horn or whatever it is that they're using for a audible alert goes off, that you are adhering to that and taking cover from that. So that's some of the things I thought about weather.
Well, let me ask a question, and you can describe this one because I know you're the weather expert as well. So when there is some thunder and lightning coming on, what should we be doing with our bodies? I'll lead you with this question. What body position should we be in?
Well, if anything, we want to get away into a strong cover area first. But some of the things you want to stay away from, flagpoles and trees and high things, all the things we learned about, because that can attract lightning, the higher objects. And then we don't want to lay down in a ditch, because if we lay down in a ditch and there's a flash flooding that you could drown, obviously. And also having your body totally in contact with the ground lying down puts more of your body at risk, actually, for an electrical charge if there's a lightning strike nearby, because now your whole body is grounded. So you have that whole electrical path going through your body from the lightning. So you want to be what they call a basketball with feet, is how we talk about it. And so you want to get down like a basketball, crouch down like a basketball, get on your tippy toes if you're able to, or at least on your feet only. So only your feet are in contact with the ground. And then you want to cover your ears if there's really a storm, like really right by you, and there's going to be a lightning strike nearby. You may feel your hair standing up on your neck a little bit. That's like really, it's coming fast. So you want to protect your ears because the lightning clap could be super loud. It could give you permanent damage. So a basketball with feet, cover your ears, and I guess pray a little bit.
Well, that praying a little bit, we always do, so that's a good thing. Now, should I be thinking about, because again, it's funny that but that's what this emergence from hibernation is all about. There's so many different things we have to cover. Should I be thinking about my power equipment and hand tools at this point in time?
Well, yes, because most likely at the end of the season, we probably just jammed everything into the shed or into the garage. We didn't really clean our tools off. So it's a good time before you get really busy to check all your tools out, check for broken handles or splinters or things that need to be replaced, things that need sharpening, whether it's your lawnmower or your chainsaw or whatever type of things you have. Making sure you have line, if you have a weed eater type thing, you have your electric spools already wound and ready to go, replacement spools, so that you can keep that weed eater going. If you have battery-powered equipment, getting the batteries checked, making sure they're charged up, ready to go. And if you still have the fossil fuel machines, which I'm moving away from, I really like the battery things, but it's a whole other topic. But the making sure the gas is fresh, if you buy any kind of gas that you're putting stabilizer in it, most of the gas that you buy now in the gas stations, needs to be treated for small equipment because the properties of the fuel can really attack the carburetor and the rubber parts on a lot of this machinery. So you have to add like a stabilizer type thing or a fuel treatment to that fuel so that your machinery will last longer and be easy to start. So that's important too. And then keeping just everything clean, oiling things up, getting things serviced, change if there's oil, you have to change the oil in the machinery. So those are the things we can do to just make sure our tools are ready to go.
And it's also enjoyable, and I call it tractor day, where you open up the garage door on one of those warmer spring days, and you know you're going to spend that day or that afternoon just working and prepping all your machines. And this is that crossover time where, especially where we live in a colder climate, where you're getting spring days, and then all of a sudden, sometimes even in April, you get a snow and this and that, and I'm saying, well, when do I put my snow blower away, my snow thrower away? And you're going back and forth. What about my snow blower, snow thrower, and the gas I bought, and some of that gas is actually sitting inside that machine? What should I be doing?
Again, the fuel in your snow blower is probably the number one thing that's going to go wrong. That spark plugs and the ignition and all the other things on snow blowers, they don't go bad. It's like 9 times out of 10, it's going to be the fuel has gone stale in there and won't properly atomize or won't ignite properly, or it even gets really worse and makes deposits in the carburetor and clogs things up. So we want to try and get that gas out of there. And there's a couple of ways you can do that. Hopefully you can at least run the carburetor dry. If there's a shutoff valve, you shut the machine off with the valve and just let it run until the carburetor runs out of gas. That's like the best way to continually dry out that carburetor. And then you should really get the gas out of the machine entirely if you can, by taking a siphon or some other way and emptying out the gas out of that tank and just reusing that in your lawnmower or wherever else you can use it. But it's important, though, that you use that stabilizer. Again, we talked about that stabilizer. It's absolutely imperative on a snowblower to use that gas treatment, or it's not going to work when it's time. Your snowblower sits 364 days out of the year doing nothing. And so that's why it's just like everything else. It likes to run, but it doesn't get that many opportunities.
And when you need it, you need it. So yeah, that's that piece of that one. Now, what comes next in the gardening world?
Well, we're planning. You know, we ordered everything, but we're starting to figure out where we're going to do our crop rotations, maybe there, maybe how we're going to do maybe a different flower, a different palette in the garden this year. We like looking at our pictures we took last year, looking at our notes from our little diary, and deciding, you know, our chain of calendar, how we're going to follow everything, you know, week by week, and start to plan, which will be flexible depending on the weather. You know, we might get a jump on the weather and you can start earlier, or the weather may stay bad in your area and you're going to be delayed a little bit, but at least you have a sequence of events planned.
And here's something for you. As you're describing that, before we came into the studio today, I was at my podiatrist's office and we were chatting a little bit, and he says, I need to get into Inspector Dave's garden. I said, yeah, you do. And I said, wait for him to get rolling. I says, because when you see what goes on inside of there, you're going to be so impressed. So good old Dr. C is very much interested in heading out to your garden. I want you to know that one.
Okay, everybody's welcome.
Now, out of all of our conversation today, to me, and it may be for some of the folks listening out there who may or may not know about this, I think this is probably personally the most important question. Is soil temperature and moisture like the one of the most important things that we can be paying attention to in our gardens, on our lawn?
Yes, especially if you're planting vegetables, whether they be plants or seeds, because the temperature of the soil is really going to affect germination of the seed. Or if the plant is going in, it's going to affect how soon it's going to really start to thrive. So if the soil's too cold, seeds will rot, they won't germinate, or the plants just won't do well. They can even die if the soil is really cold. If you notice that a lot of the different seed catalogs now and the seeds that come out have the temperature range on them now, something new they've been putting in there now is the temperature range that you need to be in if you're going to be planting. So I bought a soil thermometer 2 years ago. I use that a lot more now. And it's made a huge difference, especially on the early plantings like peas, arugula, lettuces, things, the cold weather crops, the cold crops that you like to get them in early, but there is a point where it's too early. And that thermometer, the soil thermometer, brings you more into reality. Okay, it's just too cold there. I got to wait another week or so. So that's really good. And the same with the moisture. We just talked about if the soil is really super wet and all cloggy and clay and mashed down. You can't plant in that. It's just too wet. There's no oxygen there for the roots or for the seeds.
And once, you know, it's neat, as every time you're speaking and I'm listening, because I'm always learning, and it reminds me of a story last year, an old Italian gardener, and this is later in the spring, before tomato plants should be put in, he was putting them in. And I said, well, don't you know that they could die, the frost, this, that? He goes, look, he says, I'd rather lose a few plants or all of these and replant. And they weren't from seed, they were plants. He says, because I want to get an early jump. So he's actually looking for the early tomatoes there. And there are some varieties called early girl tomatoes and things like that. But he was just looking to get a jump on spring. And I think in a fun way, that's sort of what the show is about today, is like, how do we learn? How do we prepare? And how do we make our, you know, a better spring inside of our garden? But changing gears right now, and I know that you've been spending a lot of time. How are your writings coming along at this day?
Well, I'm really having a ball with this. It's kind of a new career, new direction I'm going in, doing a lot more writing, articles. And the thing that I've been liking about them, I always wrote a lot when I was on the job, like press releases, but they were, you know, minor in nature and a writing grant application. But that's like a technical writing. So now I'm trying to write more, trying to take the technical side and get more into like entertaining writing. So I've been really having a lot of fun with that, writing local magazine articles. And I've been really focusing on trying to do history, because I find local history especially is very interesting to research in the local museum, local library. My dad's attic and garage and basement has a lot of history in it. And the people, I've been having fun talking to older people in town. And I find that people like the 90-plusers, especially if there's men that had some military, or females that had some military background, they got stories that are just incredible. And it can lead to a whole line of thought for an article that I write for the magazine. And even writing, like just the other day, I found a hardware store that no longer exists in most small towns. I actually found the wife of the fellow that owned the hardware store in town. So I'm going to be doing a whole workup on the local hardware store we used to have, the sights and smells and sounds and pictures that she has, you know, of that. And a side thought, as I talked to her more, I found out what her maiden name was, and her father and his brother were both major league home builders in the town. So a lot of the houses that were built here were either built by the first or second generation from her family. And it's like, oh, so it's like, I never thought it would go in that direction. So that's been the fun part of talking to people.
And you also know this, those folks that are 90 plus, they're not going to be around for a long period of time with their stories. And this just may be your neighbor. And you should be obviously checking up on your neighbors, as we always do, and we always say check on the elderly. But sit down and have a cup of tea with them. And as you're doing your exploring and your writings that go along with this, that's one of the things. And then one of the fun things you shared with me as you were searching for photos from the 1700s, 1800s, you mentioned about just typing in a town name and on eBay, and photos are popping up, and you found a couple full cool photos that way.
Oh, yes, that's been a lot of fun. And I don't spend a lot of time looking on eBay, but just while you just type stuff in for new listings. And one of my local chiropractor, he's actually both of our chiropractors, he is a railroad buff and has all pictures of everything around his office from the railroad days going back to like 1870 or so. And I went on the other day and I found an original train station picture that was across from his office, and then a billboard on the front lawn where his building is now advertising the town and the homesteading that was going on then and lots that were available and who the developer was. And I it was a Saturday night, I sent him an email and I says, here's a picture of like the original train station before it got torn down. And I had just read about it a week before at the library that there was a different station there, which I never knew. And the fellow that was developing in town didn't like that station. It was too small, did not serve people well. So he tore it down and put up a beautiful station that served everybody well for many years. And so I read about it 1 week, and a week later, there's a picture on eBay, like incredible coincidence there. And of course, our friend Steve immediately purchased that, and he's got to put an addition on his office soon. He's running out of wall space.
You know, it's funny. Every time I go to the doc's office, there are all these great, again, and it's a piece of history in the history of the town. You just see a cool new photo. So I guess courtesy of you, Doc has one of those. Now, you've been doing a lot of writing. Has that led to speaking engagements?
Yes, that's another thing. And I love public speaking. I always enjoy doing that. So now it's like this is like the best of the best. I get to research a topic, create a little thumb drive with the pictures and some other data on there. And then I go and talk to the 90 plusers and the different service groups in town, the old guards and the senior citizen groups and all that. So I'm there talking to them, telling them stories about what went on years ago. And then they in turn are telling me stories back. Well, yeah, well, you forgot this part. And I get to like enjoy talking to them, presenting things that I learned and researched that maybe they did not know about. And they in turn feedback things to me. So it's like, I can't believe how much fun it is.
And that's a great reciprocal. You're there to enlighten and you're also learning at the same time. So let me ask you this question. Your new book that's coming out, any update on the book, Fire in Our Lives?
Yes, thank you for asking. I'm just finished up some revisions. I had some proof copies came last month, and I had a few people, Joey B and some other friends of mine, putting a set of eyes on it and just going through it and giving it one last check. We have a couple revisions we're putting in, so it'll be probably hopefully for May by the time the publisher gets everything put back into the computer and the printing press set up and all that. So I'm hoping for May for a release is where we're at right now.
The way I equate that is when you say you're going to buy a home and close on it, the closing date never occurs on the closing date. And you know this, and I've written the closing date of your book never occurs on this, you know, the date you're looking for. But hey, we hope it's soon for you. Now, question for you. Tell me about some of the topics that are covered in the book.
Well, again, this book spans 40 years of my life where I spent it in public safety, whether it was a volunteer in the EMS, at the Red Cross, and at the fire department as a fire inspector. So I really had a lot of experiences, a lot of stories, a lot of people I came across. So I took each of those areas and I kind of put them into chapters. And it's going to be stories on fire prevention, how to prevent fires in your home and business, how to keep your family safe. All about hoarders, you know, how we dealt with them over the years and the problems they present and how we can help them sometimes. And then also safety education, which was a fun part of my public speaking, doing safety education at all grade levels from daycare on up to senior citizens and, you know, how to run those programs. And investigations, a lot of the different fires that we saw in town, how we investigated those and determined an accident, a product recall, or a bad guy or bad girl that we had to come across that we had to take action with, juvenile fire intervention, juvenile fire safety, fire intervention, doing something with that. And then there's so much that I had to do being on emergency management with weather. So there's actually two chapters on dealing with severe weather. So that's it kind of covers a lot of different areas. I think everyone can get a lot out of this book for their own preparedness for themselves and be entertained at the same time from the stories.
Well, you know what? Again, having proofed the book and gone through it, it's two things or twofold. The professional who's out there, who's the fire inspector like you or the person who wants to become that fire inspector, they can read and learn so much. And then everyone who owns a home, an apartment, because yes, you do live somewhere, there are all these little safety tips that you give throughout the book. And I think that's so imperative that people have this bit of knowledge. And then for the people that sell real estate, it's the perfect book for them to be handing out when somebody just purchased a home. Here's your manual, so to speak. Because again, you get a home and we don't get a manual. And there's an importance to having, and we always say this, there's an importance to having knowledge. And that's it. Now, can the average person help someone else in need?
Oh, yes, there's plenty we can do every day. And we talked about that all the time, just being aware of what's going on in your neighborhood, whether it's a neighbor, a friend, a family, or a stranger, that there's things we can do. And it can be a very simple thing, like just letting a guy out of his driveway. Like, well, are you helping? Yeah, you're helping somebody. You took stress off that guy. Maybe he doesn't like to back up. And so you're able to let him out of his driveway. Or helping people, maybe you're down at the big box store and people are getting that giant case of water, which should be cut in half. There's so many back injuries coming from these like 30 and 40 bottle cases of water. But you're there, maybe an older person or a person that's a little slight in stature looks at this and you just see their face like, can I help you with that? And they go over and get the case of water into their cart for them or on the bottom. So simple things like that, just being aware of like what's going on, looking for people who maybe just have a need. You're taller. The person maybe is a little shorter. You're in the store. There's something on the high shelf. Reach up, grab it for them. And that's simple things to do.
Could you imagine helping people? Then that's really what it's all about. I'm sort of joking, but really, hey, we just help each other. Life in this world would be so much better if everyone would just help each other a little bit more. So what's situational awareness?
Again, that's being aware of what's going on around you. Now, police and fire and emergency responders, that's a type of situational awareness that we have to have all the time for preservation of our safety and the scene safety. Like, we have to be aware of if there's somebody in the area that's going to harm us or harm people around us. So always knowing that whether animal or a person, with a weapon or whatever it can be, but just being aware of our presence, like what's around us. And the situational awareness can be everything, the weather, okay, there's a tree here, trees doesn't look that good, I shouldn't be near this, it's windy out, where to park your car, so that maybe you worry about the birds pooping on it, but it also could be a branch falling on it, it's the same type of thing. And just being aware of where we are when we're walking, that somebody is coming down the aisle at 90 miles an hour with their carriage, and they have no clue that you're even in front of them, and so they run into you, and you get a boo-boo on your shin or something, they run over your foot. So you want to be aware of the people around you, because most people do not have situational awareness, and they crash into you and stuff, and they can knock you down or create an injury, break your glasses, all that kind of stuff. So we want to make sure that we're really being aware of everything, and animals too, that maybe there's a dog that's got off its leash or escaped from the yard, just being aware that that's there, or there's a wild animal in the area that we're giving it distance so it can go its way and you can go your way. These are all things we want to make sure that we're thinking about. And one other thing, when I'm on checkout lines in stores, I'm always just kind of looking around, sometimes just to talk to somebody I know. A lot of times I see people all the time that know me, they're standing right next to me, but they're on their phone or they're in La La Land somewhere, and they turn around, oh, I didn't see you standing there. And then so we'll talk for a while, maybe catch up on business and family and all. And then one time I was down at the big box store, and I find those are the places for the biggest opportunity for helping people or just doing the good deed for the day thing. And there was a lady in line. She was on a little rascal thing with the basket on. She was disabled, and she was riding around, picked up a lot of stuff, gets to the checkout, and the store was very busy and they were shorthanded, so they only had checkers. They didn't have any people helping the checkers to unload and load the carts. So she's just there, and I see her face. She's looking like, oh, there's no checkout guy to help me. And I was in front of her. I said, I'll help you. And then I just started to take things out of her cart, and I'm looking around, and there's kids standing there I look at them nod, hey, you can help, jump in and stuff. And the mothers are just standing. Everybody just stands there. And I've noticed this before at the store, that everybody's just, I don't know what they're focused on besides their phone. They just look straight ahead. They won't look at you. They won't smile. They won't be aware of what's going on. But there's opportunities in these places for anybody who wants to help someone. Every single time you're in a line, there's an opportunity to help someone, whether it's just a comment or helping them find something in the store or giving them a hand with heavy items and getting them onto the belt, which would be to your advantage to help that person check out quicker so you can check out quicker. So it's like a win-win. You're helping that person get out of the store. You're helping the checkout person, and you're helping yourself too. Seems like a no-brainer to me.
Again, getting back to, wouldn't the world be a better place if we all helped each other? Now, as you're describing the being in an aisle like at a supermarket or something, I am with a camera crew at ShopRite filming organic food. So we're in the organic aisle. And while I'm on camera with a whole crew around me, a woman walks into me with her carriage and looks up and goes, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you. And I sort of joked. I said, so you didn't see me? And you didn't see that camera guy? You didn't see that camera guy? And you didn't see that sound guy? No. So situational awareness. And then one thing, and this happened to me recently, I'm driving past an elementary school as I'm coming down the road. I actually see a mom on her cell phone. She was obviously texting, and she steps out into the road. So I am situationally aware that she's going to walk out in front of my truck, and I stop. So I'm already stopped, and she looks up, and the deer in the headlights look at me like, oh my goodness, I didn't. Well, guess what? Should we be texting and walking across the street? No, this isn't a kid. This is an adult. So we need to become aware in all the other things that are going on in our life. And again, as you mentioned, there are many things going on in our life, but we can be a little bit more aware of helping other people out there. Now, for you, are there any other projects for you on the horizon?
Well, other than continuing my research, and I'm just going into so many directions now with articles, but in the garden, I have a new seed I'm going to be trying this year. It's a cross between a delicata and a butternut squash. So it'll be a winter squash that'll be like supposedly like really, really sweet and a good keeper. So I'm kind of excited about that. I always love these winter squash that I can grow and then eat them in January and February and share them with some of my vegetarian friends. So that's probably the big things I got going there. And then working with I got a new neighbor coming next door. So I'm kind of excited. He has three children, I don't know, eight and down. So I'm kind of hoping that they'll be interested in gardening there. So I may be, once they move in, looking at trying to include them over in the garden down the road and thinking about the days when I get really old and I need somebody to shovel the snow. Maybe their son will be interested in shoveling my sidewalks off for me or running the rototiller. But start easy with the kids. You know, with gardening with little kids, you just want to start off really easy, you know, easy to grow things that aren't frustrating. But I'm sort of really got that in the back of my mind. I'm hoping that I can bond with them. So as we finish up here, we talked about a couple different projects and the time of year and all that. Any other pitches you want to make about the outdoors?
Well, the first thing for me is, and I always talk about this, get out and enjoy. So you want to be safe, then you want to get out and enjoy, and you want to spend as much time as you can in the outdoors. So many of you right now listening are emerging from hibernation. I happen to be the guy who doesn't hibernate at all because it doesn't matter what season, I want to be outside. So Inspector Dave, always thanking you right now for your insight in coming on to the show.
Okay, thanks for having me. It's always great being here and letting everybody learn from me. I hope I help you with things and give you ideas on how to make your life better.
Well, guess what? I guess the reason why it might be selfish I have you on the show is every time you speak, I get to learn something as well. So thank you for that. And I just want to thank the folks for listening out there. And until next time, enjoy life's adventures. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures.